Hi. On the 5th and 6th of June 2024, I'll be speaking at the largest AI event in Asia, Super AI in Singapore, at the iconic Marina Bay Sands. Alongside brilliant minds like Edward Snowden, Benedict Devon, and Balaji Srinivasan, I'll be on a stage exploring the extraordinary potential of AI and the profound change it represents, not just for financial markets, but also for the world as we know it. With over 5,000 attendees and over 150 side events, Singapore will become a vibrant hub for a full week from the 3rd and 9th of June. Visit superai.com to register and join me with 20% off tickets using the code REALVISION. Use the link in the description and I'll see you there. It's going to be incredible.
And the Fed nail the soft landing. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With me today is Darius Dale, founder of 42 Macro. Hey, Darius.
Hey, Maggie. It's great to be back. How you doing?
Great to have you. So Fed Chair Powell spoke and the market seemed to like what they heard. What did you make of the decision, the dots, the press conference, everything?
One word. Very dovish. Oh, no, that's two words, huh? Great joke.
No, it's one big meeting, though.
Exactly. So it's incredibly dovish, obviously. The markets are appropriate to respond with both rates rallying as well as stocks and broader risk assets rallying. This is a Fed that does not want to push back against financial conditions at all, really. And certainly a Fed that it looks like it's going to continue to get us, continue getting us paid in financial markets. So as the old adage goes, don't fight the Fed, especially when they're trying to put money into your pockets.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because we I think a lot of people were sort of wondering if they were going to make a change, because we saw the last time we heard from them, the data was kind of falling in line with their narrative. This time around, we know that some of the data points, some of the inflation readings have been coming in stronger than expected. Not everything. You can find your data point and certainly you can see some pockets of, you know, weakness or things cooling. But generally, it seemed a little hotter. And then people were, and in fact, the Fed themselves, they're right, there was no change in policy, but they did raise their growth forecast. But at the same time said they're sticking by their plans to still ease three times. Does it seem doable what they're talking about?
Well, it's all doable. If they want to be as easy as they want, they can, right? So let's throw up chart one to kind of get a big rundown, quick rundown of what actually happened with respect to their summary of economic projections. So the key takeaway, in our opinion, is the Fed now agrees with our no landing call. Recall that, you know, you and I have been talking about the resilient U.S. economy theme that we authored back in the summer of 2022 and how that's likely to contribute to inflation kind of landing at a level that's unpalatable from the perspective of the Fed's price stability target. But that's not an outcome that we expect today. That's an outcome we expect in a few quarters. So getting in back into the summary of economic projections, what we saw is that they took up their real GDP forecast for 2024 by 70 basis points. They took it up 2025 by 20 basis points. And then they took their 2026 real GDP forecast up by 10 basis points. They did this while lowering the unemployment rate projections for 2024 and 2026. They increased their headline PCE inflation projection up 10 basis points in 2025. They increased it by 20 basis points for 2024. And they did all this, as you said, without changing their median Fed funds rate projection. It's still with three cuts here for 2024. They did have a slight lift to their 2025 projections in terms of the Fed funds rate. So effectively one rate hike in each in 2025 and 2026. And there was a modest 10-12 basis point uptick in the longer run projection, which is effectively the market's expectation of where the Fed thinks neutral is. So this is the first move we've seen in the neutral rate projection since going back to, I want to say, 2020. And in our opinion, it's sort of getting the Fed incrementally more in line with where market participants are. So if you go to slide two, Brian, the Fed and money market participants are now aligned. If you look at their year-end 2024 and year-end 2025 policy rate projections. If you look at the December 2024 Fed funds rate relative to the Fed's dot plot, it's essentially the same. And if the 2025 is now the same as the Fed's 2025 dot plot as well. Where there is divergence is when you look at the December 2026 Fed funds rate projection relative to the Fed funds futures market, which is 50 basis points, a full two rate hikes above where the Fed is projecting. And then if you look at the longer run dot estimate relative to the 2027 Fed funds rate price, then you see that the Fed, the market is 135 basis points north of where the Fed is. So the market agrees with our no landing scenario. If you think about this from the perspective of the policy rate, the Fed has not gotten there yet, and the Fed has been reluctant to acknowledge the fundamental changes in the economy that you and I have been talking about for the better part of 2 years now that are contributing to higher nominal GDP and higher, really just a higher nominal GDP environment that we've been dealing with for much of the past 40 years.
So it's interesting, if they're doing this, are they letting inflation go? Is there a worry that inflation rears back up if they are going to stay on their rate cut path? Or is that rate cut path subject to change based on what we're seeing?
So that rate cut path is always subject to change, right? You know, the dot plot is not a outline of where policy will be. It's an outline of where they think policy will be based on everything they know today, which could obviously change between now and then. Jay Powell has consistently reiterated in recent months that the Fed has a lot of confidence that they're going to continue to see more good data on the inflation front. Now, they have to receive it in order to actually begin implementing the rate cuts, but they have a lot of confidence that, you know, some of the things like the lagged impact of housing price and rental price disinflation are going to flow through a CBI, PC deflator statistics on a lag over the next couple of quarters to really accelerate the disinflation process. In our opinion, that'll be the last leg of disinflation we see, and we'll start to reaccelerate from a level that will not allow us to have a mean or an average of 2% inflation when you look at it across the full cycle. In our opinion, that's something the market's going to have to deal with most likely in the second half of the year. But again, this is right now, it's time to continue making tons of money on financial markets. And one of the reasons I say that is the Fed, with respect to its balance sheet policy, got incrementally dovish today. So, Brian, if you throw up slide three, where we show the Fed is, Jay Powell communicated today that the Fed is thinking about, or they have already having discussions about slowing the pace of balance sheet runoff. And again, this is balance sheet runoff. And Jay Powell has actually adopted the phrase that we've been trying to condition investors to adopt because, again, they're not doing QT. They're not selling bonds to the market. They're just allowing zero day to expiry treasury securities to roll off, and they're not reinvesting those proceeds back into the treasury market. And so the Jay Powell said that he gave us an incremental nugget here in terms of the Fed is thinking Apple reserve balances rather than abundant reserve balances. And so in my opinion, that's sort of a change that suggests that the Fed is not looking to get reserve bank reserves anywhere near the level they were in 2019 as a share of GDP basis, as a share of commercial bank assets. That's the second panel in this chart, as a share of commercial bank liabilities, and as a share of commercial bank deposits. You know, we're at 12%, 15%, 17%, and 20% respectively. And, you know, we're well off the levels that we saw where the Fed had to do an about face pivot back in 2019. You know, at 12%, you know, we were basically double where we were if you look at reserve balances relative to nominal GDP. For one instance, you know, we were at 15% reserve balances divided by bank assets. And that number got all the way down to 8% back in the middle of the 2019 policy pivot. So it's our expectation that the Fed, having learned from that lesson, is very concerned about any disruption in the liquidity and the plumbing of the financial system. So much so that they are now going to slow balance sheet runoff with inflation considerably above target. And in our opinion, that is an incremental risk on signal from perspective of asset markets.
That's really, really important to point that out, Darius. And that's not going to make it into the first batch of headlines. And for all of those of you who are listening yesterday, you heard Peter Bukvar say how much he was really listening to what they said about the balance sheet. So that's a fantastic flag. So are we right now, if we look at the economy, first of all, is the picture the Fed painted aligned with what your models are telling you about the economy? And it seems like the labor market is really important now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, just going back to what we discussed in slide one, we've been of the view that the U.S. economy has been and will likely continue being more resilient than about 99.9% of investors for the past almost 2 years. And the Fed, both the Fed and general market consensus has caught up to the 42 macro research view, which we continue to maintain. On inflation, the Fed is now starting to get incrementally closer to our expectation that inflation is probably going to be a little bit more sticky, albeit the trend is lower. The trend is still lower over the short to medium term. However, when you think about this from a medium to longer term perspective, it is unlikely we break down through the trend, through the long-term trend in inflation in a way that allows us to create a mean of 2% inflation over a full cycle. And so in our opinion, we think that because of that outcome, you know, we're going to continue to see the Fed increase its longer run interest rate, Fed funds rate projections higher and higher as we go, you know, over the next few quarters and into the next couple of years to catch up with where markets already are from a money market standpoint, which is higher for longer.
Yeah. So that, that leads me to ask about the bond market, because, you know, we did see, as we mentioned, we saw stocks rallying, but we did see bonds, in the bond market, we did see yields fall, but only a little bit. So would you expect yields to fall further from here? Or are we kind of pinned with the 10-year above 4%? Is the Fed news kind of already priced in and we're kind of stuck at this level now?
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. Now the good news. There's a better alternative. Monarch Money. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and saying they're loving it. Have you been frustrated with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads, difficult to use, or rarely updated? So was Monarch. They built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive and powerful and ad-free and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor. Invite them to your account at no extra cost, and they'll get their own login info and a joint view of all your finances. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial.
Good news and bad news. First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. The good news? There's an even better alternative. Many Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, cash flow, net worth, and more. Plus, create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. It's the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. After reading the reviews, I can see why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/vision.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So that the incremental news on the balance sheet roll-off was the key catalyst to cause yields to reverse their course. Brian, if you throw up slide 4, where we show the indexed performance of the Treasury 2-year, 10-year, and 30-year Treasury yield on a one-day basis. So as you can see, we had a nice spike, in the initial phases of the S&P release and Fed's press conference, but that initial spike actually was followed by some sharp declines. 2-year Treasury yields finished the day unchanged. The 10-year Treasury yield finished the day down 3 basis points. The 30-year Treasury yield finished the day unchanged. The 10-year Treasury yield finished the day down 3 basis points, and the 2-year treasury yield finished the day down 8 basis points. And so that, in our opinion, was a signal that asset markets need to be incrementally less concerned about the confluence of above target, or not above target, just bloated fiscal treasury net issuance, and relative to a Fed that was not reinvesting the proceeds of its bonds back into the treasury market. And so that's that, in our opinion, is actually quite positive for asset markets. Now, again, we think that the trend in treasury yields is probably higher from here, because, again, we have this longer term structural dynamic whereby the Fed has to recognize that the neutral policy rate of the economy has likely gravitated higher, which is something you and I, Maggie, talked about back as early as, I want to say, August of 2022. And we're now just now starting to see, a few basis points of the Fed acknowledging that here in the first quarter of 2024. We believe the Fed has been forced, increasingly being forced into fiscal dominance by this sort of policy pivot with respect to its balance sheet policy. If you go to slide 5, Brian, where we show the some of the key metrics of the U.S. fiscal impulse, specifically the fiscal year to date, the year over year growth rate of the fiscal year to date Treasury receipts. That's the green bars in the top panel. Treasury outlays or expenditures in the red. Those are the red bars in the second panel. And then the budget balance itself in the blue bars in the bottom panel. There we see Treasury receipts are up 7% on a year over year fiscal year to date basis. But that's actually lagging the growth rate of outlays, which is up 9%, and the confluence of that renders the budget balance, or the budget deficit itself, is actually up 15% on a fiscal year over year basis. So, in our opinion, this is this is the incremental fiscal impulse that we continue to see out of the Biden administration, which, in our opinion, continues to confirm that he's going all in on winning the election, which we show on slide 6 there. In our opinion, we think that incremental fiscal dominance is essentially forcing the Fed to take this sort of laissez-faire, very easy, relative to their own projections, kind of monetary policy stance. In this chart here on slide 6, we show our fiscal policy monitor, which we update every month when the budget statement comes out for our clients. And what the kind of the key takeaway is, the key highlight I'd show you in this chart is the, if you look into the year-over-year percentage change column, where we show the growth rate of federal expenditures, they were up 19% on a calendar year-to-date basis. On a year-over-year calendar year-to-date basis in 2023, and they're up 6% on top of that here in 2024. And so we continue to see very clear and obvious evidence of the Biden administration going all in on winning the election. And as we show on slide 7, it's actually working. So the predicted odds, where we show the predicted odds for Biden and Trump, Biden being the blue and Trump being the red, Biden is now back ahead of Trump after being falling behind Trump for much of the past kind of 4 to 5 months. And so I don't believe that's going to be sustainable. But again, for now, we continue to see this move that we're seeing higher in Biden's, I wouldn't say approval rated, but the odds of Biden capturing the 2024 presidential election, those are rising as he's stepping his foot on the gas from the perspective of the fiscal impulse. And that's something we expect to continue. It's something we expect to continue contributing to U.S. economic resiliency. And at some point in the second half of the year, most likely by the end of Q3, we'll see that start to contribute to unsatisfactory inflation outcomes.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, balancing the benefit from fiscal with the inflation side, which we know has been a hot topic in the election, not just here, but everywhere. People very sensitive to those prices. So that's a tricky one to balance from a political point of view. And speaking of that fiscal dominance, which, by the way, came up so much in week one in terms of the kind of new regime we're in, where fiscal dominance is front and center. It's so different from what we were used to previously, and everyone trying to grapple with that was one of the big challenges that came up from our series in week one. And there's a headline today, I'm sure many of you saw it, Intel awarded $8.5 billion from CHIPS Act grant. Now remember, the CHIPS Act was passed in 2022, so that legislation is older, but we're seeing some of this stuff come through the pipeline. Could also receive up to $11 billion in loans tied to this legislation. So there's so much of it right now, and it's got to impact so much of the economy, Darius, in a way that really we all have to. I mean, I know you're modeling it like crazy because this is so different from the monetary policy, which was dominant for so long, especially in that zero interest rate environment.
Yeah, no, it's really quite remarkable, quite frankly. I mean, we're in a historic era. This has been a very unique business cycle. This is one of the most, in my opinion, just from someone who studied business cycles at a very high level for the past 15 years, this is the most unique business cycle we've ever seen. We've never seen such uncorrelation between the various sectors of the economy throughout the business cycle. We've never really entered a business cycle with such high levels of liquidity on household and corporate balance sheets. What else is different? You know, the handoff from monetary dominance to fiscal dominance, you know, in this particular business cycle has been unique as well. We've had immaculate disinflation, which is something that has historically never happened. You typically need to go through a recession to actually have significantly positive inflation outcomes. We've also had immaculate slackening in the labor market, i.e. we've had slack created in the labor market primarily through the guise of a reduction in job openings from the perspective of labor demand, rather than the perspective of the total employment. And so there's a lot of weird, funky things going on. And if you're relying, like you and I've talked about this before for months and quarters, if you're relying on old models, particularly on the DSGE or autoregressive side of things, those models are not trained, cannot be trained for what we are experiencing here. So you need someone to piece the puzzle together from the perspective of all the different puts and takes on how the economy actually functions and performs. And if you don't understand that, we highly suggest you partner with someone that does.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It feels like we've been rolling out of, we went zero interest rates was an experiment. This is an experiment. I mean, it is, we're just in that period right now. Speaking of chips, by the way, gosh, if they're not at the center of every conversation we seem to be having, because in addition to all of this, of course, regime of fiscal dominance, we're layering on what is the beginning of what many believe is an enormous tech revolution around AI. And we're trying to figure out what that means, what that might mean down the road, and what role chips are going to play. Jordi Visser and Beth Kindig sat down today and had a fascinating conversation about tech. If you didn't get a chance to see it, it's on the platform. I highly recommend you do. Of course, everyone wanted to know about valuations, about what's happening, about the winners, the potential winners in the AI space. Let's have a listen to a clip from that, and then we'll talk on the other side.
Yeah, so I guess I would preface all this and just say, get comfortable with semiconductors. They are 50% of the AI market. That's up from 20 to 30% of the mobile market. And they will be, for us, the right way to participate in AI in the near term. We had like 45% allocation going into 2023 to AI. I want to say 40% of that was semiconductors. And the other thing that I guess if there's anything you get out of this conversation today, it's that the semiconductors are going to become the AI software players. Already, NVIDIA, the biggest announcements this past week, in my opinion, are the Omniverse Cloud APIs. Apple is now partnering with NVIDIA on Omniverse for Vision Pro headsets. Like, since when does Apple partner with somebody on software to attract developers?
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing. You've heard the headlines. Inflation is unchecked. The dollar is collapsing. The government is printing too much money. The fear is real, but there is a solution: gold. The government can't print more gold. Gold isn't collapsing, and gold's value increases during inflationary times. Noble Gold Investments is here to help you protect your wealth. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They've secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Whether you're a seasoned investor or new to the game, Noble Gold Investments simplifies and secures your gold investment journey. Choose between a tax-advantaged gold IRA or have physical gold delivered to your door. Noble Gold Investments ensures a seamless and easy transaction. Invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision. Few investments make a better long-term hedge against inflation, depression, and economic downturns than precious metals like gold and silver. Plan for the inevitable and protect your environment savings with a gold-backed IRA from Noble Gold Investments. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They have secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Gold remains steady when inflation is on the rise and the dollar is in turmoil. Its value doesn't just hold, it increases during inflationary periods. And unlike money, gold can't be printed. It's your shield in times of economic uncertainty. Invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision.
Whenever Beth says, if you take one thing away from this interview, we're all like, mic drop, what? Underline, exclamation point, bookmark that on the platform. Go watch the whole interview. It's fantastic. And Beth is part of our RV marketplace. So you can go check out her outstanding work there and get a discount in the process. So Darius, how are you plugging this other sort of new era we're in into how you're thinking about things? And I know there's been so much sort of angst about these valuations and the momentum we've seen and the narrow nature of the market. But then you have the kind of this fundamental argument that you also have to plug in. And a lot of people just are not sure what to do with the tech space. And they're leaning again today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So they're sort of, you know, in our opinion, so there's two things I'll say on this, in terms of how to think about this as an investor from the perspective of modeling the economy. In our opinion, obviously, AI is going to contribute to a faster than what we've experienced in terms of productivity growth. Now, how much? We don't know. We don't really know what the terminal destination is for that either. But we know that it's more relative to the recent trend, particularly the recent trend of almost 2 years of negative productivity growth. So AI is one of those contributing factors. We also have declining labor turnover and turnover in the labor market. The quits rate and the hires rate are now back to at or below trend levels. So that is contributing to higher productivity in the labor market in terms of that reduction in turnover. And then we also have improved supply chain conditions. And one of the things we track are the supplier delivery time components of the ISM manufacturing services reports. And those numbers are at or below levels that, you know, at or below cycle lows from previous cycles. And so, you know, we know that, you know, if we have slower supplier delivery times, i.e., you know, better supply chain conditions, you can create more widgets or more units of a service in the same amount of time. So, you know, we're having this productivity renaissance here in the United States of America. And that's something that going back to, I think we got the Q3 productivity data point on October 31st. And then I think a day later, we were like, you know, you got to get long a soft landing trade here. In our opinion, obviously, that made our clients a tremendous amount of money. And now that soft landing trade is starting to morph into a no landing trade, which will continue to make our clients tons of money here at 42 Macro. But from the perspective of how to play this going forward as an investor, Brian, if you throw up slide 10 in today's chart pack, where we show this suggests that the AI theme may be overpriced for the current pace of development and deployment. Now, don't hear that headline and think, oh my God, Darius Dill is bearish on AI, because I'm not. I'm very bullish on AI. What I'm trying to tell you is that you might need to be more bullish on other segments of the economy as opposed to AI from this particular moment going forward, i.e. we expect the market performance to continue broadening out as it has done over the past kind of 4 to 6 weeks. So in this chart, we show price to earnings ratio, the price to sales ratio, and the percentage of market cap, overall S&P market cap for the combined tech and communication services sector. So we take those sectors, combine them, and then we show again, the price to earnings ratio is at 31. It peaked at right around 50 at the previous tech bubble. So we got a little space to go there. But if you look at the bottom two panels where we show this price to sales ratio, that number has already eclipsed the peak that we achieved in the previous tech bubble. And then if you look at the combined market cap of the tech and communication services divided by the total S&P 500 market cap, we are now at the level that we peaked at in the prior tech bubble. So, you know, I'm not saying that has that's a hard, you know, cap that you can't go past those levels. But what we're effectively arguing for is that if the Fed is now telling you what our models and we've been communicating to our clients for quarters and months, that the no landing scenario is now the highest probability scenario, then you need to go think about other equity market participation broadening out. One of the reasons we have seen such laggard shift in things like small caps or some of the more credit sensitive components of the credit and equity markets is because there's been this expectation that a recession is around the corner. It's around the corner. It's around the corner by many market participants. And one by one, they've all gotten squeezed into capitulation on that view. And they will continue to get squeezed into capitulation on that view. And one of the reasons for that, there's two main reasons for that, in my opinion. Brian, if you go up slide 8, where we show the West Village Montauk effect, or at least one representation of the West Village Montauk effect. And in our opinion, it's by far the least understood structural force in the economy, and it's costing bear porn victims trillions of dollars in squeeze shorts. And so let me explain. The West Village Montauk effect, and this is from my own experience of living in Manhattan for a decade, fancy myself a well-known socialite in Manhattan. One of the things I noticed, even as I got older and started making more money and things of that nature, is that the people who live in the best places in the city, the best apartments, and the people spending the most money on $5,000-$10,000 bottles of vodka aren't necessarily the older guys who have the money to spend on it. It's actually the young kids who have rich parents. And the reason for that is when you have a stock of savings that is high, i.e. your parents' inheritance, you can spend a higher share of your discretionary income. So if you're making a six-figure salary at Goldman Sachs as a 23, 24, 25-year-old analyst, you're spending that entire six-figure salary on a very fancy apartment and a very and very expensive bottle service because you don't have to save any of your money because you know that you're going to inherit a bunch of money from your parents. So that's what I term the West Village Montauk effect. And this is happening throughout the entire U.S. economy. So in this chart on slide 8, we show the rate of change, the percentage change in household cash, household net worth, corporate cash, corporate net worth, and nominal disposable household income, all indexed to the end of 2019. And then we compare that to the inflation index at the end of 2019. Household cash is up 135%. Corporate cash is up 51%. Household net worth is up 34%. Corporate net worth is up 32%. And nominal disposable personal household income is up 26%. All those numbers are higher than the 20% appreciation we've experienced in inflation. And so what's happening is we continue to observe this in the PCE report every month, is that the personal savings rate for the economy is now 200 to 300 basis points lower than it used to trend at because everyone is sitting on this giant stockpile of savings. Now, it's not evenly distributed across the income spectrum, but when you're talking about aggregate statistics and the economy, you have to factor in every single cohort in that spectrum. So in our opinion, this is something that's been incredibly misunderstood. Maggie, you and I have been talking about this for almost 2 years. Yeah. I'm not sure why it's still misunderstood, but we're happy to have it be misunderstood because, again, our clients are making a ton of money being long assets as a function of this.
Yeah, I think it's misunderstood because unless you're, those who are sitting in that constituency are not exactly yelling it from the rooftops. And everybody else is feeling the pain. And so, it doesn't seem like it feels like we're in that kind of economy, but we certainly are. I mean, those who are sitting on wealth, it's grown, in leaps and bounds over this period. That's so fascinating. And I think that's going to have tentacles throughout, especially as we're facing election and what sort of economy you're talking about. And even for the Fed, we talked about this yesterday, you're trying to deal with two very different groups who are feeling very differently about how things are going. And can you satisfy them all? I think we have a real problem with that right now, and it's going to have repercussions. We've got a couple of questions coming in. I want to get to them. And one of them is really interesting. And I don't know if you caught this. Tony just put lots of eyes on. I love it. Because Paul said, that's why my kids are spending everything they earn. Paul, Darius just solved it for you. Now you can go back and model it and claw some of that back. I love it. I love it. If you're not in our chat on the platform, come join our community. These guys are hilarious and gals. It's the best. Someone, where are you? Asked about, see, let me go for my other document. Everyone's having so much fun. Quentin asked, any thoughts on the time Powell spent discussing CBDCs in the presser?
No.
Central Bank Digital Coin. No thoughts on that.
I have thoughts, but none that are going to help you make and save money in financial markets. So
right. In a minute, by the way, which is, I cannot believe all we have left. Quentin, I wonder if also because that's what the reporters were focused on asking him about. But that is interesting. And I'll pass that along to the team. Maybe we'll bring that up with Raul tomorrow. And then Doug asking, what do you think the new base yield might be? This is along the question I asked you. Are we stuck pinned here now? And when will the economy settle at this new yield? The new interest rate and the economy settle. I would also add to that, do you worry that the Fed loses control of the bond market at some point, especially if inflation seems like it's going to be sticky? you know, that's something that comes up right now. It's sort of towing the line with the Fed, but is there a worry that at some point they sort of lose the confidence of the bond market?
Yes, but that's probably a 2025 discussion rather than a 2024
down discussion. out on that in on the modeling. Yeah, when inflation shows up more.
Yeah, so I mean, we model the economy with statistical econometric tools, but we also model the economy with qualitative frameworks that, you know, piece the puzzle together. And both of those, you know, frameworks, both of those, you know, independent processes are suggesting that inflation bottoms sometime in Q3, maybe even early Q4, and starts to reaccelerate from there. That reacceleration probably won't be readily obvious and apparent to the average market participant until sometime in early 2025. And, you know, depending on what level we reaccelerate to, that's when the Fed may, you know, lose control of the bond market. But in our opinion, that's maybe two or three trades away. In our opinion, in terms of how we keep our clients on the right side of market risk, i.e. making money and protecting gains in financial markets, is we respect the current market regime, do enough research to understand what the market regime is going to change into and when it's likely to change. And that's something obviously you got to be behind our paywall to get.
Yeah. And that's a great point. And I just want to underscore that when we're talking about AI, you know, I think Darius laid out the longer term narrative that's bullish, but then the short term issues with liquidity and the rally broadening out and the best opportunity perhaps being elsewhere. So you know, you need to be nimble with the timing. It's something that came up with Jordy and Beth as well in terms of valuations. You know, there's long-term narratives that Beth feels very bullish about and Jordy has been switching his thoughts about. And then there's some shorter-term market dynamics that you have to be aware of. And so we always need to be cognizant of that time frame. Darius, fantastic stuff. It's just so important to have that discipline of all the modeling you're doing in this environment when there are so many moving pieces. Just a programming note for everybody. So you heard me mention it before. We've got Raoul Live and Jamie Coutts tomorrow for the daily briefing to kind of wrap up some of the themes that have come up in the series. First week was challenges. This week we're talking all about the opportunities. So we're going to get Raoul's views on both. So join us for that and pepper him with questions. We're going to talk to him about some of the different views that were expressed that are kind of opposite what he's thinking and get his response to that. And then Friday, we've got a day of workshops lined up. They're going to be so much fun. The Najarian brothers and Imran are going to kick us off. I had a prep call with them today. They're hilarious. That's going to be a lot of fun talking about what you need to know about options, how you can best use them. Raoul and Jared, both on planning for retirement. Jamie on everything you need to know about trading crypto. And this is an opportunity for you to ask specific questions about your portfolio so we can get a little bit deeper into the weeds. First come, first serve, plus and above. Jump on our offer for 14 days of plus for $1 if you are not in plus or above so that you can register and participate. And of course, the rest of you get to watch it. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you join us for that. Darius, thank you so much for joining us today. Always great to catch up with you.
It's such a pleasure to be with you, Maggie. And thanks everyone for tuning in. I appreciate all of you guys as well. Always a great audience, great questions. Catch back.
Fantastic. Darius has been hiding out in the warmer climes of Miami, but he's coming back to the cold. So enjoy the last of it. Enjoy the last of it, Darius. All right, everybody. Thanks so much. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Good luck out there.
One of the most popular Real Vision series ever is back. How to Unfuck Your Future will explore the problems we're currently facing and, more importantly, present solutions. We've got an incredible roster of guests, including Raoul Pell, Dario Perkins, Beth Kindig, and Denise Scholl. We'll be digging into the crucial topics, including how AI is going to impact election year politics, the problems with central banks, the global housing crisis, and a lot more. You'll get in-depth, long-form analysis from real experts on the stuff that's really happening. And best of all, you'll get access to the entire series for just $1, which is kind of insane. Go to realvision.com/your future. That's realvision.com/your future and join us for what's going to be an epic 2 weeks of learning and discovery.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.